Hello there, listener. Hope you are Android developer. My name is Artem Zinatulin, and you're listening to The Context, a podcast about Android development. And this is episode number 7 with the main topic, React Native. And as a co-host today, we have Hannes Dorfman. Yo.
Hey.
And as a main guest, and basically the only one today, we have Philippe Lima, who is an Android developer at Airbnb. And Hannes has some introduction of Philippe to you.
Yeah, Philippe is quite an interesting person, I think, because he has quite an interesting CV, because he's from Brazil, but now working from San Francisco for Airbnb. But before leaving Brazil, he has worked at ThoughtWorks, which is quite a renowned company, right? Maybe you have heard of Martin Fowler and so on. Is one of those great software scientists working there at this company. So Philippe decided to leave this company and to start a new adventure in the Silicon Valley by joining then another startup called GoGoBot. And then he started his Android rockstar career at WeHearted and then eventually joining Airbnb. Is that correct, Philippe, or...? Have you said something wrong?
That was pretty accurate. Very nice. Thanks for the introduction, Hannes. That was perfect.
Yeah, I didn't know these details. Sounds great. So I guess since Felipe in a rush, because we have very bad time zone difference between all of us, and Felipe has to go to work, and we are just came from work with Hannes, let's start with direct questions about React Native. So, Felipe, just for clarification, what is the difference between React Native and other cross-platform solutions like PhoneGap or Xamarin?
Okay, sure. So React Native is quite different, actually. Other platforms like PhoneGap or Xamarin, they are usually called a hybrid frameworks in the sense they are pretty much usually a web view that you embed in your app, and they have some kind of they run JavaScript on this web view. So it's like doing web development for mobile. You're not really doing any mobile work. It's just a web view. It's like a browser embedded in an app. Mm-hmm. Whereas React Native is quite different. Because it ships its own JavaScript runtime, so it's called JavaScript Core, and this runtime it runs in a background thread as part of your application. So it's a regular Android application that ships a JavaScript runtime, and this allows you, and it also has a native library that translates JavaScript into native code. So it's pretty crazy, actually, once you think about it, because as soon as your JavaScript is executing, it's gonna evaluate that and then translate that into a view hierarchy. So it on the fly, it's gonna determine how your UI should look like, and then draw them as regular views on the UI. So that's the big difference. You get a very native feel for your app. Because it's not a web view, so it's much faster than other hybrid frameworks. So what you're looking at is a regular app that has been driven by JavaScript, but it's really just views and view groups. That's all.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I'm a little bit confused because you said that there is a React Native which compiles down to, for Android, it looks like it's Java, right?
So React Native, it's JavaScript. All the code you write is JavaScript. I mean, there's also a Java component, mm-hmm. so you can write bridges that communicate back and forth with JavaScript. But the main your main app is written in JavaScript, yeah, and then it gets translated into native views.
Oh, so like if I used a button in my React Native JavaScript code, it will be translated to a Android widget button, right?
Correct. Not exactly, but so So React Native ships with some built-in widgets, for example, for the common view components, for example, like you said, buttons, like layouts, so not really layouts, I'll get into layouts later, but buttons, view pagers, what else? Like all the basic components, like radio buttons, you know, check buttons or switches. So it ships with a set of like standard components. So if you use them from JavaScript, they get translated into these standard components. But you can also extend it to make it use any, pretty much any view you want. Like you can say from JavaScript, you're writing JSX, which is this. It's like an HTML embedded in the JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you write tag my layout, and so as long as you have a bridge that knows how to translate that my layout into a view, then React Native will automatically use that view for that element.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an extension mechanism where you can plug in new view components and you can extend it the way you want. So it's pretty neat actually the way it was built. It's quite a nice architecture in my opinion. It's very like complicated actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you said that the programming language is basically JavaScript. So you as a developer are writing JavaScript code. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. The main language is JavaScript. Even though you're probably gonna need to know some basic understanding of native development because you're still shipping a regular app, right? So you need to have at least a shell of an app of an Android and iOS app that connects and communicates with your JavaScript. So there's like a bundle. So this bundle is like a giant JavaScript file that ships with all your application code.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of things that are going on, but pretty much you write all your JavaScript code in multiple files. You write your views, your components. React follows its own specific architecture pattern. And once it's compiled down to a single giant obfuscated JavaScript file. And this mm-hmm. file is shipped as an asset in your app. Right, so it goes to the assets folder, and at runtime, React Native loads that JavaScript bundle, that file, parses that file, and then that's your app. Your app is inside that JavaScript file. But you still have a native app, you know, that needs to do this work. So there's a little piece of native work that you need to know how to do.
Okay, but we as Android developer are used to typed scripting languages.
That's a big problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that an issue for you, or can you use TypeScript or even maybe Kotlin to transcript to JavaScript or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'll talk with my personal opinion first, and then I'll extend the answer, but. I am a big fan of types, to be honest, and I don't want to give them up. And once I started working with JavaScript, with Java and Android, I didn't want to go back and do JavaScript again, you know, because I really miss having the compiler safety and the types. I think that's a very vital point of programming, that it's not something that you can just, you know, abandon completely. So I'm personally not writing any JavaScript right now, and my work has been mostly just supporting other teams and making sure they can be productive with React Native and building the native bridges and stuff like that. So I consider myself as still an Android programmer, and I want to keep that way, and I don't really want to mess, you know, with JavaScript stuff, at least not for now. But you definitely can use TypeScript or PureScript or whatever language compiles or transpiles to JavaScript. You know, as long as you have, in the end, you have a JavaScript file, is all that you care about, right? So if you have something that transpiles to JavaScript, that's great. You can use Kotlin if that works for you, you know, or TypeScript. So that's definitely an option. There's also another framework called Flow, which is pretty exciting. I haven't used yet, but it's like a more progressive way of adding types to your JavaScript. and it allows you to type things as you go, and you don't have to be like all in or nothing like TypeScript. So with TypeScript, you have to add types to everything or not. So there's no like middle ground. And with Flow, you can add types and start to like slowly improve your program and be more confident over time. So that's like an easier way to get started in adding more types to your JavaScript code.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about build tools and IDE testing tools? Like, how does your workflow look like?
So I'd say React Native is still pretty early days. It's still very, very, a starting and new technology in the sense that there's not a lot of support and a way of doing things that's, vetted by community and an easy way of doing. So a lot of things you're going to have to struggle a lot to do. One of them is exactly build tools. So there's very little support. So React Native ships with a template, with a generator project that you could run like React Native new project, mm-hmm. much like other frameworks like Rails, for example. You do Rails new, you do like React Native new, and it builds like a new project for you with like a template of a set of like a Hello World view and stuff like that. So that's an easy way to get started. But for us at Airbnb, it wasn't an option because we already have this giant app and we cannot just, throw everything away and start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we couldn't use that because it wouldn't work for us. So we ended up having a very customized custom implementation where we added JavaScript we added React Native to our app. So we still have an app with many features and it's a pretty big app. And we started to slowly develop some features on React Native. So what we did was a lot of manual customization, a lot of, research in order to make sure that process of adding React Native to an existing app would work, because that's not really what it's built for. It's built for like new apps. So it was literally a lot of work to get it done. So if that's what you want to do, you're probably going to have to spend some time doing it. If you're doing a new app, from scratch, great. That's going to be much easier. So it kind of depends on what your use case is.
Mm-hmm. But basically, you can apply all modern techniques from web development world when they write on JavaScript, right?
You can, yeah. You can use pretty much any NPM package you want. Mm-hmm. You can bring them in. They get compiled into your bundle. So you can use any Redux. I'm not super familiar with web development. I haven't done this in a while. And I'm not really writing any JavaScript right now. But you can use Redux, or any other fancy, web framework or pattern that people are mm-hmm. using. That's totally fine.
And what about rx.js?
You can too. Anything goes, like I said, mm-hmm. as long as it gets compiled into your JavaScript bundle. Like I said, it's a giant JavaScript bundle file that gets shipped with your app. So anything can go in there, any library you want to use, like including RxJS or Redux or anything. Mm-hmm.
And that also means that this React Native runtime is one-threaded, right? Because as far as I know, JavaScript is one single thread language, so it basically applies to all your React Native code, right?
Yeah, that's correct, and it's a good point. React Native has a few different threads that it runs, and exactly because of the fact that JavaScript is single threaded, there's one thread. It starts one thread, and that thread is dedicated to JavaScript. So that's actually a good side effect of using React Native, is that all your code runs in a background thread. And this background thread is responsible for, executing your JavaScript and in translating that into your native views and calculating the layout and stuff like that. So all that stuff happens in the background. In the meantime, your UI thread is completely free. So you never really, you can't really block the UI, because you don't have direct access to it. So React Native automatically does everything in the background and only sends to the main thread the resulting layout once it's already calculated and ready to be displayed. So that's a good thing that you're kind of like set up for success because you're already working on a background thread. So you don't need to worry about async tasks or anything like that.
Well, that's true. But for example, if you have some complicated business logic in React Native, How
correct? Yes.
Will it be the same performant as if I route it in Java, for example, using RxJava or something like this, which allows me easily use multiple threads in my code?
Yeah, so that's a common question to like it's React Native is pretty fast if you look at it and compare to a regular. If you open the Airbnb app right now, we just shipped the trips feature, so you can like book trips and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff is written in React Native, so if you want to play around and see for yourself, maybe try it. But most of the stuff is React Native. It's pretty fast, but of course it most likely will never be as fast as writing it as a native app. You know, because you have the overhead. You want it or not, you always have the overhead, you know, of parsing JavaScript and calculating the layout. So there's an extra step in there, mm-hmm. you know. So it is pretty fast, and it can be optimized more and get faster. But I don't think we will ever, you know, be as fast as a pure native app. So I think there are some use cases for it that work fine, but it's probably not the best idea for like a UI intensive app, you know, or like a video, like a something that has a complex interaction. You know, I'm trying to think of one app that fits that description, but I can't really right now think of anything. Or for example, like Google Inbox, it's a pretty, you know, involved UI with a lot of animations, and you know, it's not a simple thing. So I would probably not build that with React Native at all. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, you could build the settings page or like a user profile page or something that's simpler, you know, not as involved. So I've been kind of advocating for people to evaluate and see what fits best for the React Native use case. So I think you have to kind of evaluate on a case by case scenario, and it's definitely not a silver bullet, you know, for like it's gonna fix all your problems and you're gonna be shipping two apps in one. It's not really that, you know. It's a really exciting and new technology, but it's still evolving a lot, and it's not gonna work in every case for sure.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it gives you speed in development, which is also important.
Exactly. Yes. So if you think about a startup, for example, you're building an MVP. You need to prove your business model. You want to ship something really quickly. You know, that's a great fit. You know, you just ship two apps in one, right once, you know, for both platforms. So it's really great. For Airbnb specifically, it was really good for us because we really had a shortage of mobile developers, and we needed to scale our mobile teams and ship more code and be able to be work more effectively, you know, and be more productive. So we got all this, a lot of these web developers we had with that we knew a lot of React, and they were like shipping code for web. They did an onboarding process to be able to ship native code, to ship native apps. And they started contributing React Native to the apps. So that means we were able to scale the teams very quickly and ship much faster. You know, instead, if we wanted to train them with native iOS and native Android, it would take much longer. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of rationale behind it.
Okay, and how do you use React Native at Airbnb right now? So you said there were some features you have implemented in React Native. What kind of features are there, or where do you use them now?
Like I said, we just shipped the trips release. It was like a big release. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there were like articles on the press, and there was a big event where people announced it. So you can now like book trips other than booking just home. So you can like book an experience and stuff like that. And there's like guidebooks, and there's a whole new set of features in the app. So almost all that stuff was built in React Native. So there's like a new team that was built, like a new, brand new team that was built for creating that feature. And almost all that stuff is React Native. We have a couple other things, like if you want to like change your reservation, let's say you're going to Frankfurt next week and you want to change the dates to stay a day longer or stay one less day, that flow is also React Native, but it's like a very specific flow. So we've been trying a few features on it. Of course, it's still very experimental, and we're still evaluating the results, you know, and iterating on it. So we may or may not invest more on more time and more, you know, more developer effort on it in the future. It's kind of to be seen yet. But I'm that's something I'm excited about, and I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there's a big, you know, future, and it can be like a really big thing in the future. But like I said, it's not for everyone. It's not for every app. You have to be careful. You have to also because it's still evolving a lot. So Android is still not as good as iOS, unfortunately. So iOS work started a little earlier than Android for React Native. So it's still catching up. So some things are not as fast. There are some bugs that exist on Android, but they don't exist on iOS. But I think eventually that's going to get better. But I guess we're going to see. So we're still experimenting and slowly trying it in a few features.
In production.
So,
yeah. Yeah, that's already in production, yes.
I mean, experimenting.
Yeah, correct.
So your Airbnb app is basically mixed with native Android activities and so on, and with React Native components. Do they interact well with each other, or are there any problems you have faced with?
Yeah, they do interact with each other, yes. So we have a thing called React Native Activity. That's something we created. It wasn't part of the framework at all, but it fits our needs. So we have a React Native Activity and a React Native Fragment, and they are regular activities, right? They have nothing special other than all they have inside is a React, it's what is called React Root View. So that's a view group that is kind of like the placeholder for your React Native, you know, hierarchy. So the way it works is we have these React Native activities. They can be launched at any point in time when you're using the app. So you have a native activity that can launch a React Native activity. And so then you can switch from a native flow to a React Native flow and back, so it can go back and forth. So from a React Native activity, you can also launch a native activity. So you have this seamless experience where you can go back and forth from React Native, and you may not even notice. So that's something that we built, because it was not part of React Native at all. We had to like make sure that fits our needs, you know, and make sure the intents work, and passing the bundles back and forth work. So those are a bunch of customization, you know. It's not something that's like, you know, you get out of the box and great, it works. It's not really that. So, but it works pretty well. We can go back and forth. So it's like I said, it's a regular activity, and you can also embed it in other activities. So since it's a fragment, also you can embed a piece of React Native view inside a regular activity.
Oh yeah, that sounds interesting, especially the embedding a fragment in a native activity.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. But how does the debugging stuff works then? Or have you faced some kind of special issues with, let's say, crash reporting since you have launched that in production? Can you use Crashlytics or something like that?
That was kind of nasty. We do use a custom bug reporting tool. It's not Crashlytics. I don't know if I can say what it is. It's just like but we use a third party bug reporting, one of the most famous ones. And yes, you can use that. So any JavaScript exception is going to be thrown in your native app. So you can either catch that or let it, you know, crash the app. So debugging is a little complicated, because first thing, your JavaScript code is obfuscated, and so you can't really read the stack trace and know what happened, right? It's like proguarding your code, you know. You have to translate it back to the real method names and function names, you know, in order to read it. So first thing, there's this thing called source maps in JavaScript, which is what translates the obfuscated code back into the real code. Mm-hmm. So we also had to build this source map support into React Native. It wasn't already there. So we do this translation, and so the way we do is we upload this source. So the source map is like a giant file that does this mapping. So we upload this to our bug reporting tool, and then whenever there's a JavaScript crash, they automatically do the translation for us. So they use the source map to show the correct stack trace. So that works fine. Like I said, it was a bit of customization, but we were able to see JavaScript crashes exactly like a regular crash. So you see, like, JavaScript reception in the stack trace is your JavaScript stack trace. So it's pretty neat. For development, it's actually much better than native development. You know, if you're used to Android, you know how painful it is to, you know, wait for Gradle to build, and you know, now with Instant Run things may get better, but it's still pretty slow, and Instant Run doesn't really work for everyone in every case. And oh, yes. for React Native is really, really nice because you have like this thing called hot module reloading, and you have like live reloading and all this fancy, you know, developer support kind of tools, where you just press the menu button on the device, and there's like a custom menu where you say like reload JavaScript, and then boom, your code is updated live. So as soon as you save the file, there's a thing called a packager that you can run in development. So this packager, it just watches your file system, your JavaScript files, and whenever a file changes, it rebundles that and sends to your app. So if you hit menu reload JavaScript, your packager will serve a new version of the file, and then all of a sudden you get the updated code, you know, in seconds. It like takes like what, 1-2 seconds to do that. And there's this other thing, if you enable, I think it's called hot module reloading, as soon as you save the file, it boom, reflects on the app. You don't even need to go to like menu reload, you know, it's instant. So the development experience is really, really nice. You know, you're much more productive, you can iterate much faster. But yeah, there's some drawbacks. So this is one of the neat things, but of course that's at the price of running JavaScript in your app and stuff like that. So I can see that getting bigger over time, because, you know, it's just really nice. It's like doing web development for native. It's literally like that.
That sounds very interesting, because I'm currently working on the workflow when you're, as a developer, working on your local machine in Android Studio, that the build will happen on some remote machine, which is much more faster, and hardware is better there. Just because sometimes, 2 or 1 minute of waiting is literally going out of the context, and, you know, as a developer, you lose time waiting for the build.
Yeah, that's a big pain for us, especially with Gradle, and that's probably a topic for a separate discussion. But we recently moved to Buck, which gives us faster builds. So that helped us with being more productive. But if you're a React Native developer, you like ship much faster. You know, it's crazy. It's like doing web development. Refresh, you know, boom, refresh, boom. So it's really productive. It's amazing.
And you were able to integrate React Native building steps to the Buck, right?
Yes, that's something that we're doing right now, actually, because it's not, there's no really built-in way of doing that. So even for Gradle, we had to customize a little bit, because how it works is there's like a task, React Native adds a task that hooks into your existing build pipeline. So I think it hooks into process debug resources or something. So it does like a before running that task, it uses React Native to build your JavaScript and puts that in the assets folder in your output directory. So that gets shipped with the APK. So that's how it integrates into your build system for like building a release app, for example. So that's the release procedure. For development, you run the packager, which is this thing that I said that you watches your files and serves a new version to the app. So that's like your development. So there's a big difference between your development environment and your release steps. And for Buck, that doesn't exist at all. So we're going to have to build that from scratch pretty much.
And you probably work in IntelliJ instead of Android Studio, right?
Yeah, correct. We had to migrate because Android Studio was just like choking. It was freezing every second.
Yeah, and it's really painful. Very high tech coupled with Gradle.
Exactly.
And you're probably using JavaScript support in IntelliJ, so you write code in IntelliJ, right, instead of some other editors.
I think people funny because I think people are using like Sublime or Vim or Atom. I don't think people are using IntelliJ because of the fact they are not remember they're not Android developers. They are originally web developers, so these people like used to web. So they have to test on both devices, right? So imagine you have your computer open, and you have an Android emulator and an iOS emulator, both open at the same time. So you're not really focusing on one platform or the other, right? So you're like writing code once, and then you refresh and you see it update in both platforms. So you can use any editor you want, pretty much. But I think the most popular ones are probably Atom or Vim.
Interesting. And how much code were you able to share with iOS team? Or probably even with website and web front-end teams?
I don't think we have any code sharing with the web teams right now. I think it's probably possible to do that, and something we discussed in the past. We do share pretty much all of the JavaScript code between iOS and Android. It's the same JavaScript code, right? There are some places where you need some kind of branching, you know? So like some specific, you know, very specific platform logic, like if it's an Android, do this, otherwise do that. You can have like platform specific components as well, or you can say you can have this component for iOS and the other component for Android. But I think you have very little of that. Pretty much all of the code we have in JavaScript is the same. So it's like one code for both apps. So this is exactly the same code is used by both apps. And of course, you know, you have the native bridges, and those are written in the respective native apps, so those are not shared. But the JavaScript code is like 95%, you know, of the volume, and that's completely shared.
Mm-hmm. And you basically have some kind of if defs, right, in the React Native code, like if def it's Android or if def it's iOS, or I mean, does this code get shipped to the build? For example, can I see iOS-specific code in my Android app, for example, in Airbnb, or it gets cut at build time?
No, I don't think it's cut at build time. I think it's probably shipped as part of the bundle. Everything is just thrown into the file. I'd be surprised if it doesn't, if it gets stripped off, but I'm not really sure, actually.
Okay.
Okay, let's dive into some questions about the core framework.
Okay.
As the name already suggests, React Native is heavily inspired by a web framework or library called React. So is it true that you basically have the same render method and so on you have to implement if you want to build your custom component? Or how does it work in general to build a custom component in for Android or in React Native for Android?
It's exactly like React. It's the same framework. Like you said, you have a render method with your view in there. So you write the JSX code. It goes into your JavaScript file. And you have your React components. And I think I'm pretty sure the JavaScript React code is... Yeah, I'm 100% sure the JavaScript React code is used by React Native. So it's pretty much it's the same framework, right? It has, of course, a layer on top of it that adds the native support, but you're writing React, so it's like writing for the web. So we have components and the render method and the state management is all the same paradigm.
Ah, got it. So just for those of us who are not familiar with the React in general works, how does it exactly work? So you have one render method, and this method will be called by the framework, or how does it work?
That's funny you ask me that, and we're talking about React Native, but I know almost zero about React, to be honest.
Okay, good.
And I have written zero React code. I mean, I have written some, you know, sample stuff, but I know like the general concept behind it, where you have these components and they have this render method, and you're supposed to like create very small and reusable components, and you pretty much build them and you like use them together as like a Lego, you know, a Lego. You just like using component inside the other, and you kind of build them together. And they have the render methods get what gets called for rendering, and you have the state management. I don't really know how it works, to be honest, but it's kind of funny. But I know the general concept, but I wouldn't be able to explain you exactly how it works.
Okay, so as far as I remember from my very few experience with React, is that basically, every component, like a UI widget, has its own state variable, and then you modify the state variable, and every time the state variable will be modified, the render function will be invoked, and then eventually will re-render the home, the whole virtual DOM. Like, I'm not sure how it works in React Native, but I think it will work in something similar fashion.
It's pretty much the same. It's actually exactly the same. But the difference is that when your render method is invoked, so what happens is React Native ships with an implementation of CSS. What's that thing called? It has its own implementation of CSS layouting, and
a CSS flex box.
It implements Flexbox, exactly. So it ships with Flexbox, and what it does is, like, when your layout changes, this Flexbox implementation is gonna calculate the new layout based on your new, you know, your updated render thing, and then that's gonna be translated into views, right? And with absolute positioning, like, this view is like x and y 0 0, the other view is 0 10. So the CSS layout is gonna determine where each view goes, and that gets translated. That gets sent over to the native app, where that, you know, it's translated into regular views. So that's pretty much how it works.
Oh, cool!
Very simplified version.
Yeah, but it sounds cool. So basically, there is some kind of diffing algorithm, and then it's doing all this stuff automatically.
Exactly.
For you.
Yeah, exactly. It does the diffing of the tree and see what changed. So, oh, this view was removed, this view was added, this view size changed, this view color changed.
Okay,
so
it does
all the diffing and then sends the updates to the view.
Okay, so as a traditional Android developer, we have this resource folder where we put all these layouts and strings for internationalization and so on. So is it possible with React Native, or is there a similar concept for different, let's say, layouts and different strings for, let's say, German and English and Russian and so on? Or how does that work in React Native?
So there's no no real concept of regular XML layouts like you have for Android apps. So that doesn't exist. All your layouts are part of your JavaScript components, of your React components. So the whatever is in your render method, that's your layout, right? So your JSX is your layout. So you don't really have any, you know, layout XMLs or anything. For strings, what we do is we have a static analysis step that during build time, it analyzes all the strings used on the JavaScript. And that gets added to our strings.xml file on Android. So we ended up with a lot of, like, auto-generated strings, and we named them like React underline Native underline and the string name. So those strings get generated automatically. So they get added to the English file, right? So the English file gets these automatic strings, and then that gets added to our translation pipeline like a regular string. Right, so we just it just gets added to the other languages later, but it's a simple string in the strings.xml file.
Okay, and I guess there's no major issue with the Flexbox implementation that it will work for phone and tablet layouts, since you don't have to specify or can specify two different layouts. So I think, since the web is doing fine with different screen sizes and so on, by using this layout, Flexbox layout, I guess it will work with React Native too.
Yeah, Flexbox is pretty flexible, I would say. you don't really need to specify, like, different layouts for different screen sizes. As far as I know, it should just automatically, you know, it should quotes just work. So it should, like, automatically expand and shrink based on screen size. So as far as I know, we didn't really have a lot of problems with that. But like I said, I haven't been writing any of the JavaScript, so I could be wrong. But as far as I could tell from the, you know, developers' complaints, this was not of one of their complaints. We had other pain points, but this was not one of them.
Yeah, too bad Android doesn't have flexible XML.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about complex widgets like Recycler View, ViewPager, and so on? How do you write adapters for them? Or do you even need them? And how does recycling work?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's no real concept of Recycler Views or adapters on this React Native world. So adapter is pretty much using an Android-only construct, right? So it doesn't really translate to React Native. So you don't really have recycler views, period, or list views. There's no concept for that. So all your views are laid out, you know, as is. So there's no concept of view recycling. I guess that's the real answer. So that's one of the kind of drawbacks of React Native, because you don't really, you can't really reuse views like you do in a simple, you know, recycler view. And that's where it can get really slow if you have a complex, you know, if you have a giant list of stuff, you know, there's going to be no view recycling. So that could be easily be a memory problem for you. So that pretty much that concept doesn't exist. For ViewPager, in the other hand, that does exist. There's a React component for that. So if you say like there's a specific thing you can use in JSX, I think it's like ViewPager Android or something, that gets translated into an Android, but that's like an Android specific thing. So if you need, since iOS doesn't have that, you're gonna have to use some other thing on iOS, right? But that's supported. That can be used.
But at the same time, do you think it's possible to create such a recycle view binding, for example?
I don't think it can be done, to be honest, with the current way that React Native works. I don't think you would be able to do view recycling and have an adapter like you have for a regular app, because just because of the way it works, you don't really have control over, you know, what view is used, and you know, you don't have like that kind of low level control. All you have is your JSX and your components, and that gets magically, you know, laid out on the screen, and you don't really have a way of modifying that. So I can't really see how they would implement a recycler view or an adapter pattern on React Native, and I don't think that's gonna ever exist. But maybe I'm wrong. You know, I just don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm. And what about data loading? So for example, I have React Native component that displays, let's say, user profile. And how do you load data to display? Do you load it from the native part, like Java or whatever language you use, or you load it directly from React Native?
So React Native ships with, like I said, ships with some built-in components and modules and stuff like that. So one of these built-in components is a networking component, of course. So it's gonna use, by default, it's gonna use OKHTTP for all your networking. So whenever you make a network call from your JavaScript, it's going to be translated into, ultimately, it's going to be sent over the bridge into Native, and it's going to end up in OKHTTP, and OKHTTP is going to fire a request for you, and it's going to send it back to JavaScript once it's done. So that's pretty much how it works. Mm-hmm. So for us, we customized that a little bit, of course, because we already had our networking pipeline and our customized OKHTTP instance with caching, you know, and some interceptors and stuff like that. So we just told React Native to use our own OKHTTP instance, and that's it. So it's just a regular network call. So it goes through the native bridge for that.
Okay, so good to hear that such customizations are possible. And what about image loading? Let's say you have to display a profile picture.
Image loading, React Native ships with Fresco, which is Facebook's image loading library.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we don't use that because we had our own image loading pipeline. So yeah, we had to do a lot of customizations. So what we did was we plugged into Glide, which is the networking the image loading library we use.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, we share the same, you know, the same cache and the same loading defaults.
Right.
So everything is kind of shared between React Native and Native. So when you load an image from React Native, it goes through our Glide instance, and that is this kind of the same flow that our native image is using to get loaded, so that they share the same cache and configuration. So that's a little neat.
Mm-hmm. So did you have to create some custom UI component for that, or a standard image view, or I don't know how it's called, was able to do that?
We had to extend to kind of override the default image loading component. So React Native registers these components by name. So it's like it's like a key value pair. So we have like a RCT image manager thing, or image something. So if you add a module with that name, that it's going to automatically use that instead of the default one.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of override the default one by using, by override, you know, by setting our own module that uses Glide instead of Fresco.
Got it. Okay, sounds good.
And what about some more trickier things like lifecycle events, like onCreate and so on? Does React Native components need them at all, or how does it work? Do they need lifecycle?
That's a good question, man. So we have, like I said, we have a regular activity. So we have a React Native activity it's an activity that has just a single view called React Root View. And we forward all the lifecycle events to React Native. So whenever we have like on create, on resume, on pause, on destroy, we also call like there's this thing called React Context. So React Context is like an Android context, but has some React knowledge about it. And we just forward, like we do like React Context dot on create, React Context dot on destroy. So they know about lifecycle. And I think you can hook into them and do stuff, but I don't really know how we use that from JavaScript, because there's no concept of onCreate or onDestroy on React, right? Because that's like an Android concept. So mm-hmm. I think there's a way to hook into that, but I'm not sure. But what we do is we just forward all the lifecycle events to React Native, and they just pass it on to JavaScript.
Okay, got it. And what about state? Do you have to restore the state something, or save it in a bundle or something like that? Or do you have an experience with that?
That's also something I'm not super familiar with. We do some state management. I can't remember, to be honest. I'm going to have to look that up. I don't really know.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, it seems to be possible, right? You can just grab it and restore it.
It definitely is possible. We use like bundles for like passing arguments into like React Native activities and fragments, and we can pass data back and forth. So I don't see why that wouldn't be possible. I just mm-hmm. don't really know how that works, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, process def and so on should be possible to restore the state, since you can always communicate with the activity somehow over the React Native bridge. So it should be possible, but we don't know exactly if it works out of the box or how it works, right?
Correct, exactly.
Yeah, moreover, okay, got it. It looks like the how does React handle its states internally. It looks like you can just grab it and restore it one-to-one, like how it was before.
I actually expect React Native to do that out of the box, because all the state is managed by the React components, right?
Right.
It has complete knowledge of what's going on, so it should be able to just, you know, restore that completely if we rotate. So I don't see why you would have to do something custom for that to work, but I don't really know, to be honest, what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so last question. We know you have to go to work. So how easy it is to interact with system services? Like, for example, if I want to show notification or set an alarm or go to SQLite database or open a camera, is it possible?
So, yes, it is possible. I would say like the general rule for is it possible is yes, it is possible. Anything you want to do, you can do. Because you have complete access to the native stack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So by having these bridges, this is the real key and the real like goal of React Native. Because by using this bridge, you can communicate back and forth from JavaScript and native. So all you have to say is have JavaScript make a call. Hey, I want to know what's my current location, GPS, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you have a bridge that responds to that. So there's this thing called, there's an annotation called at React method. So when you want to annotate a method with this annotation, this method can be automatically called from JavaScript, which is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you have a JavaScript saying like, hey, react.foobar, as long as you have a foobar method in your app that's annotated, that gets called for you, right? And then you can pass data back and forth. So you can say, oh, give me the current GPS position, right? So mm-hmm. you can do that from native and then send the result back to JavaScript, and that's it. So there's a built-in location module. Sorry, location. Yeah, location module. There's a built-in camera module. There's a built-in, like, all the standard stuff is there. I don't know exactly every one of them, but definitely GPS and camera are there. You can extend it to do whatever you want. I'm not sure about push notifications. I think there should be one already, but I'm not sure. But if there isn't one, like I said, it's just a matter of like adding, like registering a new bridge that responds to that call, and that's it. So you create like a notifications module, and then you create a method annotated with like @react method send notification, and then you pass the string title and string message, and that's it. And then you use the notification manager to display it, and you're done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and you probably need to convert your objects. Like, for example, if you want to pass complex object, you need to convert it to JSON, right?
Or not? Yeah, that's one annoying part. Okay. There's no really way of passing, you know, complex objects. And that's something that I sent a pull request to React Native some time ago to add the support for this. Mm-hmm. But it just takes forever to get something merged because there's so many things changing, and you get merge conflicts all the time, and the tests are failing, and then you need to get someone to merge your PR. So it just takes forever to contribute. But anyway, right now you can only pass like basic data types, like integers, doubles, strings, you know, arrays. You can pass like a string arrays. So it's pretty much JSON, right? So you have to kind of parse it back and forth from JSON, which is kind of annoying. What I've been doing is like we use this JSON to parse it back into a Java class. So we use JSON to parse this JSON into Java, so we don't really have to do any manual parsing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little, you know, it's a little verbose and error prone.
Sure, sure.
In the sense that there's you have to write a lot, and there's a lot of boilerplate, but you can pass any object you want. It's just a thing of matter of parsing it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess we have to free you up so you could go to work. This was very deep and very interesting to hear. Thank you very much, Felipe. Yeah.
Thank you guys for inviting me. I just wanted to call out that I'm really a big fan of you, both of you. So I had the chance of meeting Hannes in person at DroidCon Berlin some time ago, and wish I can meet Artem in the future too. But I just want to say that I'm a big fan of your work and what you've been doing for the Android community, especially with this podcast. It's really great.
Oh.
And thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much, Felipe. We also appreciate your work at Airbnb.
Yeah.
Thank you. And yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go to work.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and I'm stopping recording.